In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
A favorite political saying of mine was first said by Plato 4 centuries before the birth of Christ. One of the penalties for refusing to participate in politics is that you end up being governed by your inferiors. Likewise, ignoring politics until 2 months before an election leads to you paying for what your inferiors have been doing for the last 22 months. And right now, there is a massive expansion of the welfare state. The Biden administration is handing out tax credits of $300 per month per child. It's not a tax credit. It's a welfare payment. A tax credit implies you make money to get a credit back. No work required to get this. It's about conditioning people to be dependent on government. Because if a good chunk of your livelihood depends on government, you won't want to change that government. And as you'll hear today, this tax credit is just the tip of the iceberg. With the massive push to communize America, it's looking like Democrats will lose big in 2022. But they don't care. They have already siphoned off trillions of dollars for themselves that you will spend the rest of your life paying for. Not bad for 6 months worth of work. How long could you and your political friends make $4 trillion last? The left sees government as their business. It's where their profits come from, to generate all the money they need to tell you how great socialism is, and when most people get most of their livelihood from government, all opposition is over. Thankfully, today we have two great guests that will fight back. Coming up, Alex Carlatos, but first up, I'd like to welcome Congressman Burgess Owens back to the show. He is an author, a former NFL Super Bowl champ, and he is a longtime guest of iSpy Radio, which undoubtedly helped him win Utah's 4th Congressional District, taking it back from the Democrats. Burgess, it is always great to talk to you.
Mark, my pleasure. And you're right. You guys are the game changer, buddy. So thanks so much for coming through for me. We need it big time.
Well, we'd certainly like to think so. All of that early media training for you, I guess. So
there we go.
I should mention that we are talking to you on your recess vacation, so we really appreciate the time today. And let's just go ahead and dive right in. Okay. And starting with some potentially good news, what are some signs that you're seeing that could lead to the Democrats losing control of the House in 2022 and Nancy Pelosi losing her gavel?
What a good question. And it actually, Mark, goes back to my faith in American people. Look at our history, and we have a history of doing the right things at the right time for the right reasons. And what's happening right now is American people are waking up. You know, we all need to have contrast at times. We all know how that works out. Life is not always perfect and blissful and exciting. We have those times where we just have to grow up and kind of have perspective of what we are. And that's what we're going through right now. We have contrast where American people are finally understanding what true cultural Marxism looks like.
Yes.
It's not a conversation, a hypothetical conversation we need to have like we've done for so many years. You can see what it looks like when all of a sudden the freedoms that we take for granted, the freedom to go to church, the freedom to put our kids in school, the freedom to open up our business, all those things literally within a few weeks were taken away from us because of fear. Mm-hmm. And so that is the way that the left has always worked. We now understand how it works out. And the great thing about coming out of a year like 2020, the silver lining is we're talking more today than we ever have been about things that's going to make a difference, whether it be critical race theory, which we'll talk about a little bit later on, whether it be school choice, whether it be the power of small businesses and regulations and taxes, all those things that kind of have been just on the fringes when things are going well.
Right.
But it's now in the very center of our conversations. And when we, the people, start talking together, there's nothing more powerful than that, no matter what side of the aisle we're on. So I'm excited about that part of it. And we win when we start talking like we are right now.
Oh, I absolutely agree. And I think you're right, is that the American people have been really shocked to see that what for so many times was just kind of theoretical discussions about the left and what they believe. No, now we're seeing it in action.
Yeah. And I can say this too. I might have mentioned this last time we talked, but it also shows the reason why I have so much faith in American people. Because even though we were disappointed, many of us, as a conservative, someone who loves our country, loves with the fact what the last 4 years was going on in our nation with so many people succeeding. We're very disappointed we lose the Senate. We didn't get back the House. And we lost the executive branch. But here's the upside. Collectively, as a people, we did something that was miraculous. We flipped 15 seats and did not lose one incumbent seat when it came down to the Republican side. Mm-hmm. So that gave us the closest margin in terms of seats. We have a 5-seat margin that has never been this close since World War II. And what it does, very simply, it allows the left, because they're so arrogant, because they're so in your face, and they want to sprint to the end, they're going to show who they really are right now because they think they can get there. The other side of it is that because it's such a small margin, those, quote, moderates who really want to stay in Congress, they can't stay on that left ledge very long. They have to start moving back toward the middle to common sense because they do want to be around in 2022. So that being said, we can see what they would like to do, but because they don't have the votes, they can't do it all. And yet the American people can say, you know what, now I understand exactly if they had all the power, what they would do, and it would take away all our freedoms.
Yes.
And we don't want that, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, just a slim margin, and just imagine what they would be doing right now if they had massive supermajorities. I mean, that's really frightening to think
about. It'll be over. It'll be done.
So I'd like to get your take on the on-again, off-again feud between President Trump and the Republican National Committee leadership. And for those that are not aware, Trump's lawyers, Rudy Giuliani and Jenna Ellis, allege that the RNC lawyers refused to get involved with election fraud investigation despite raising over $220 million to so-called stop the steal. They also allege that Ronna McDaniel had promised to fire the RNC legal counsel, which refused to get involved. She didn't, and now she denies it, or as Jenna Ellis says, Ronna lied, and they have the receipts to prove it. And because of that lie, Ronna needs to step down. I don't think it's any secret that Ronna McDaniel has not always been the most fiery supporter of President Trump. But we really do need to focus on fighting the Democrats. I think it's clear that Trump's America First message is definitely the dominant one which I know that you certainly support. But there are still people in the RNC who are against that and against him. So what are your thoughts, and how do we get to a united front where all Republicans at all levels get behind the America First movement?
It's real easy. We need to put our egos aside, very simply, and remember who truly is the enemy. And this is not only within the Republican Party, but it's also Republicans, Democrats, Independents. You know, for those of us who love our country, now is our moment to show that we love our country by disciplining ourselves and realizing who the enemy is. The enemy is the cultural Marxists who hate everything we stand for. You know, we're a country that believes in God, country, family, respect for women, and authority. That's who we are. That's what we grew up thinking and believing. And for many of us who grew up in that era, I am so thankful to have been raised by parents who taught us that way. Well, we have a cultural Marxism that hates God, that hates family, and hates the capitalism of free market. That is our true enemy. And so for those who truly want us to move forward, let me just say this. Put aside all the bickering. It doesn't matter. Now, again, I'm not sure with all the details. I would say this, my experience of what I've seen with Ronna over the last 4 years, boy, did she come through for President Trump when it came to getting Michigan together. And I truly believe, when you start looking at the numbers, what, 75 million people voted for President Trump? I don't know all the details of all the infighting right now. I'll say this. There's an enemy that we need to fight, and it's not us. It's not we the people.
That's right.
It's those who truly use misery as a political strategy, who love misery and will continue to cause chaos in our country, whether it be defund the police or tear down the walls or raise taxes and inflation. Chaos is what the left, the hard left, thrives on because it causes fear for many of us, for many people, as opposed to faith. So we have to just pull ourselves together. I would say this, the 15 seats that we flipped, the 15 freshmen, we don't always agree on everything. But I'll say this, I truly believe that team that we put together is going to represent the new face of the Republican Party. We're articulate, we're diverse, we love our country, we have different cultures and backgrounds, but we have one thing in common. We believe in meritocracy and we believe in our nation. That's what we have to come together with, and I think American people showed that in the way we did the flipping of those 15 seats this last go-round.
Yes, I certainly agree. Time for break. More with Burgess Owens right after this. And welcome back. We'll continue our conversation with Congressman Burgess Owens, who is gracious enough to join us while on recess from the House. And so, Burgess, the Democrats seem to have the strategy that they will buy their way into people's hearts by spending, spending, spending. The first two so-called COVID relief bills were really only about 10% for COVID, but hundreds of billions of dollars that will fund Democrat causes on Democrat states. Even in the recent $715 billion infrastructure bill that passed back on June 30th out of the House, Democrats have vote-buying items, including a new program to forgive the unpaid water bills due to COVID and then to help pay water bills in the future. So what are your thoughts as we move forward and look at some of the bills and how the Democrats are strategizing by essentially buying votes?
Well, a couple of things. When it comes down to Democrats, don't ever look at the bill in the name of the bill. I put through some legislation. I'm sure it's not going to pass, but legislation that the bill that we start putting through have to actually have something to do with the legislation that we're trying to pass. In other words,
that would be nice.
That would be nice to know exactly what it comes down to. No, the game is over. And that's what I think I'm excited about. The game of switch and bait, a bait and switch, the game of just not being honest with people, the game of fear, the game of calling everybody every name you can think under the sun. Those days are done. American people are realizing that number one, you go to the gas tank, you go to the gas pump, and if you go within 1 week from $37 to $67 to fill up your tank, then that becomes something very personal. Mm-hmm. It's not something you can all of a sudden say that it's not a real deal. People are realizing through true experience what's happening when inflation goes up. When we all of a sudden can't put our kids in school, well, businesses, I don't care what side of the aisle we're on, businesses cannot open because we can't have people come back to work because we're competing against government. These are the kind of experiences that are personal, and it takes us from being sympathetic. And I'm going to use this in this way. I've always believed in school choice. I've watched what the left has done to my community in terms of taking away the educational piece of it. And we have ignorance everywhere. And of course, that's how they get the power through emotion. Well, all of a sudden you have parents who in the past, because they were in the right zip code, they were able to afford to go in the right school, they had sympathy, but they didn't have empathy. Empathy now that they see what it is not to have choice, that their kids are being taught CRT and they have nothing to do with it. And they have a labor union that's in your face, arrogant, saying, I'm going to do it no matter what you think. All of a sudden that sympathy goes to empathy. And we have now a conversation with people across this country, no matter what side of the aisle we're on, who care about their kids, are saying, I now want to have choice. Well, it works out with that. It works out with inflation. It works out with taxation. It works out with regulations. All the things that really go to making sure we have a nice, moving forward society that's growing is now in our court because we have the right answers. And the Democrats are just, they can't do it anymore. They can't continue to connive and scheme, and it's over. So we just have to continue moving forward and just talking and opening the minds of those who are now ready to listen to what we have to say.
And I think that's so right, is that now, having gone through what we've gone through, they are much more willing to hear what we have to say, that's for sure. That infrastructure bill was the first in a decade to include home district projects known as earmarks, 1,473 of them, nearly $5.7 billion. Yeah, Republicans had gotten rid of pork barrel spending under Obama, and now the Democrats are bringing it back. I think this is a horrible mistake by Democrats, and I truly think that's going to backfire on them. What are your thoughts?
Well, this is the thing that I think all Americans need to kind of consider, because I know exactly the earmarks, the pork barrel, something I was totally against. As a matter of fact, I was so glad they got rid of it. The problem with the way it works out now is that people like myself who represent District 4, I'm the one that really knows the best about what this district needs. I'm the one now, as long as things are transparent, here's the caveat. The earmarks, the pork barrel in the past was not transparent. You saw people taking advantage of it, not only personal income, but also people they knew. The way that it was set up, this was years ago when the Republican Party began to address it. But it was set up is that, first of all, it has to be transparent. You can see on time what's going on, real time, what's going on, where it's going. It cannot be a connection with the representative, anybody that could be beneficial from it. And what it says is this, that I now can go to my district and say, this is where we need to have, for instance, infrastructure, for my district that the people in D.C. have no clue about, or the people in the Senate have no clue about. So what it really does, as long as it's done correctly, as long as it's once transparent, and you have a process in which you're actually talking with the district and you get the stakeholders involved with it. When you have that being done, then we the people are being represented by those who know we the people best, and that's people like myself. And it's also, by the way, it's capped out at 1% of the total budget, so that doesn't change. It's just now a matter of those of us who want to put in something. For instance, we have a real major problem here. A good example, Mark, with infrastructure. We grew 15%, and yet we do not have in place anything that's going to help us to grow in that process. Now, again, the executive branch, the Senate does not know exactly what I can do here. I do know that, and so in that regard, the way it's been tweaked, I do feel that it could be a very beneficial thing for those in the district that I'm working with. And every district feels the same way, by the way.
Well, in the past, Congress has certainly abused this, but if the changes that Republicans push through do truly make it more transparent, then that could be a good thing. So we'll definitely need to keep our eye on things. But in terms of, just real quick here, do you think we have the full extent of the left's planned destruction via bad bills, or is there even worse on the table still being hatched behind closed doors?
What a good question. Well, first of all, just know this. Remember, everything that the left does is based on chaos, is based on destruction.
Yes.
They always talk about reimagining, but this is a group of people. This is an ideology that's never built anything in the first place. They never build anything. It's impossible. A godless ideology of communists, socialists, and Marxists cannot build because they have no wisdom to build. They can only tear down. So you're right. I think if they had the power, you see so many crazy things coming out that would destroy our country. But here's again, the magic, or actually not magic, the blessings of a country that really goes back to our foundation of freedom. We flipped 15 seats, and therefore they cannot get through what they had normally would love to, because those moderates who want to be in those purple districts, they want to be around. They cannot continue to be with AOC and actually decide and figure they're going to be around for 2022. So to answer your question, I think we're going to start seeing more bipartisanship as we get close to 2022, more common sense, and a drifting away from those moderates, away from that left. They're going to kind of stiff arm those people, get away from as far as they can. So I think it'll be okay.
Yeah, I think you're very right on that, because I think legislators tend to do their worst right up front because they know, or at least assume, voters have full lives and short memories. So they hope people won't remember the bad bills and only the candy they offer right before the election.
Always remember, Mark, to that point, remember the senators who always say they're conservative. And boy, they say it. They love being conservative the last 2 years. The first four, they do whatever they got to do. And then, of course, they kind of drift back.
That's right.
To their base when they need to get back in place again. So that's what the Democrats are looking at doing too.
That's right. I think that's a great example. All right. Let's go and take a break there. We'll have more with Congressman Burgess Owens after this. Coming up, we'll get his thoughts on critical race theory. Burgess Owens, former NFL star and now congressman from Utah's 4th, is joining us today. And Burgess, you're an outspoken critic of critical race theory. This has its origins in Marxist ideology and has become a real tool to divide America. Why? Because a nation that is constantly squabbling and at each other's throats is one that must be governed, when instead it used to be that we're all focused on being Americans and achieving that American dream. But the left says blacks can never achieve that American dream because whites are keeping them from it. So, in my opinion, simply put, critical race theory is something that Nazi education ministers would have taught their children about Jews.
Absolutely.
You introduced two pieces of legislation about critical race theory. Talk to us about both critical race theory, what you think about it, but also what those bills would do and what's the status.
Okay, let me talk about what critical race theory refers to, and I'll talk about the bills. I lived it. I lived during a time in the 60s when youth, our young people, were taught to hate each other based on skin color. It is evil, is racist, and the things that I now have conversations with those young people that I, you know, we were young at the time. I was 16 years old when I first was exposed to white Americans, and it was a very hard process to overcome the prejudice of our fathers. And as I now have reconnected over the years with some of those same people, the things we regret is that we weren't raised during these days. We weren't raised when we can spend time as friends and hang out and go to movies and date, all those kind of things that we now take for granted. Because in those days, color was everything. It is evil. And it's also very demeaning of the Black community.
Yes.
What the critical race theory, it can only work if you have the Black race looked at as a hapless, hopeless race that is oppressed, that is just too weak, too cowardice, too weak to overcome the oppressive white race. That's what these people want us to believe. All we have to do is go back in our history and realize how untrue that is. And I'm going to give you a little bit of history, for instance, that it's so important to understand how well we've done as a country. Now, we've not been perfect country because we're not perfect people. Only the left thinks they're perfect. That's why they can judge everybody else. The rest of us knows that we're trying to become a more perfect union. We're always trying to become better as we grow, as we get older. Well, this country, here's a little bit of history that's been scrubbed from our history books by the left, the true racists. I don't know how many people out there know that the very first martyr for the cause of freedom in our country was a guy named Crispus Attucks.
Yes.
He was a member of the Sons of Liberty. He was respected enough that because of his death, because of his leadership, history will never forget him. There's another guy, name is James Armistead. The very last battle in Yorktown, there was a double spy, Black spy, his name was James Armistead, that Washington has so much trust in that he was able to go and get the information that they needed to win that last battle. So on the dove end of the Revolutionary War, the beginning and end, were two Black men that were respected, that history will never forget. You also had in between 5,000 Black Americans who fought for freedom, shoulder to shoulder, by the way, not segregated. They fought shoulder to shoulder with their white patriots. Now, I can go through so many. Oh, here's another one that I think you'll really find interesting. When you see the Washington going across the Delaware, take a look at that tallest person to the bow. His name is Oliver Cromwell. He's a light-skinned Black farmer who fought in four or five different battles with Washington, and he's at the bow of the ship, helping to guide it. Right next to him, sitting down, is a guy named Prince Wimple. He was a former slave. He was in a couple battles with Washington, giving us freedom at the very end. I can go to a litany of people like that. Now, here's the deal. If we were a systemic racist country, you couldn't go to the National Archives. You couldn't go throughout the internet and find these examples. The only reason we don't hear about it is because this true systemic racism is the far left, the Democratic Party, the labor union, the educational union that actually scrubs Black history so that they can give the new narrative that we were truly never involved, never part of it, never contributed, and never was a part of a cohesive team that made our country what it is. The more we know about our history and what we've done together, the prouder we are in our history, the more appreciative we are of today's, where we are today, and the more vision we have for our future. The left wants to take that away from us,
sure,
by making sure that we never know about the true history of our country. And by the way, Karl Marx said it very, very aptly, the first battleground is rewriting of history. And what the labor union, the educational union, the hard left, the Democratic Party has been scrubbing Black Americans from our history books for decades because they are the true races of our nation.
Mm. Well, by doing so, you certainly control the narrative because, as you say, if people actually knew the history, then you couldn't say that America was systemically racist. You do have those two bills out there, and I kind of have to laugh when I saw those because you've set up this situation, the irony of Democrats being forced to reject a bill from a Black man who wants to do away with institutionalized racism. I mean, that's really rather funny when you think about it. So talk to us about the status of these bills here.
Okay. Well, the bill, the first bill was basically one that says that CRT, a critical race theory, cannot be taught in the federal, because we're actually, we can only control the federal piece of it. The school system has been, and Shazzy should be done on a local level. But we can control the fact that CRT cannot be taught to federal employees. That's the first thing. The other one was a letter, more or less saying how evil and racist CRT is. That it divides us. It teaches our kids to look at each other in a way that Martin Luther King said we should not be. It for those of us who kind of grew up in that arena of trying to overcome the evil racism, we were moving so far, so fast away from it, and we cannot afford to go back to that. So that letter was pretty much a note of saying what it was, and that we cannot afford in our country to teach our kids to go through that process and be hateful and angry at each other based on the color of our skin.
Mm. Well, yeah, and I think that's such an important point because, I mean, you're a sportsman, you know, an NFL Super Bowl champion. Do these race-based programs like critical race theory, do they teach people to be winners?
No, it's not about winning. And that's what you have to understand about anything that's godless. You know, what made our country so unique is our Judeo-Christian values that's based on order. I mean, in other words, we have rule of law, we have the Ten Commandments, we have things in which if everybody agrees to, and no matter how we worship God, we all agree to wanting to do the right thing so we can be blessed. Well, guess what? That means you and I can ride down the road on the right side of the highway, understand that everybody's going to respect the same laws because we all want to be safely getting to where we need to go. The other side of the aisle does not care about getting us to where we need to go. It's all about destruction. So no, critical race theory, when you start dividing people, even on a football team, you can have the greatest talent in the history of mankind. If you have a team that's not harmonious, who believes in each other, who has each other's back, they're not going to win. The year that I won a Super Bowl championship with the Raiders, wasn't that we were the youngest, the fastest, the most talented. We just happened to be the tightest team. We just believed in making sure that we had each other's back, that we were not going to be the weak link, and we applauded each other's success. We did not care who got the credit. That's the key of a winning team, and many people never understand that. That's why it's very difficult to be part of a team that gets through all the minutia and gets there and finally together feels so close.
Well, just real quick, do you think that Republicans plan on running on removing critical race theory in 2022, which I think would be, again, somewhat ironic because you would be uniting people against the dividing?
It's already happening. You see, what the left does, they're cowards and they're bullies. They want to deny that they're even doing it, by the way. They want to deny there's such a thing as critical race theory, as the labor union is telling them that they're going to make sure that they get it, that they tell this no matter what. Now, the mistake they've made is that the American people are waking up. You get mothers and fathers who now realize that their children are being indoctrinated to hate. Then all of a sudden they have time to get on school boards. They have time now to get out and make sure that the right people are voting. In other words, we now take that time. We, in the past, we were in this little dream world, this little freedom bubble in which we're just living our lives, you know, making sure we're in retirement, make sure we're getting our memories. We now realize that we cannot live in this bubble if we want our kids to have any kind of freedom in the future.
That's right.
It's the greatest thing that's happened to us. The more they push this craziness, the more they push people not going to work, people not going to church. I mean, all the stuff they thought they can get away with, the more they push it, the more American people are going to see it and push back. That's when we win. It's not going to be in the legislative piece. It's going to be we the people who's going to turn their backs on them.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely agree. The threat against America is real, and people are finally waking up to it. Burgess Owens, I want to thank you so much for your time.
Well, Mark, thank you. Once again, good talking with you. And Burgess for Utah, for those who want to see some op-eds and see where we're going. And of course, please join me on Twitter. We have a really good Twitter communication team. And so I would love to make sure you guys are keeping up with everything we're doing. Okay?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You're listening to the I Spy Radio Show.
Today is a day to catch up with friends. We just got off the phone with Burgess Owens, and now we'd like to welcome Alec Scarlatos back to the show. Alec is a former Oregon National Guardsman and candidate for U.S. Congress in Oregon's 4th Congressional District, that's in southwestern Oregon. He was also in a movie directed by Clint Eastwood about Alec and his friends who stopped a terrorist on a train bound for Paris. Alec, it is good to talk to you. It's been a while.
Yeah, it has. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it. And isn't Burgess like the nicest guy ever?
Oh, he is. He really, truly is. You know, he's been on our show, I think, starting 7 years ago. And he's just always been so generous with his time. It's just a real hoot to talk to. And you know, you get to know him quite a bit off air as well. In fact, we had visited with him when we went through Utah 2 years ago when we went out to Wyoming to visit our son. And it was just so great to meet him in person. He really is. As nice as he sounds on air, he's even nicer in person.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I, along with people who watch races far more closely than I do, truly believe that you were going to win that race last year against Ancient of Days, Peter DeFazio. And I'm still somewhat surprised that you didn't. So let's get to the big question out of the way. Are you running again in 2022?
Yes, we are. We announced about 2 months ago, and we've had an incredible showing of support since then, even stronger than last time. I think people are really sick of the coronavirus lockdowns on top of, you know, everything that happened last year as well. And I think people seeing that the rising cost of living and all the extreme policies that the Biden administration is getting behind, people are really hungry for change.
Well, I certainly think so. And I certainly think that people saw how close you came. It was your first time running for office, and you nearly unseated somebody that's been there since 1987. So I think that certainly encourages people as well. Are there some voting demographics or issues that you underperformed in last time that you think that you can do better this time?
Yes and no. We kind of, especially early on, we had a lot of support, much like President Trump did, from people that typically weren't necessarily Republican base, but then we lost some supporters from people that were traditionally were the Republican base. And I think a lot of that was just the fact that President Trump was on the ticket as well. We ran pretty much right on par with President Trump in the district. And unfortunately, it just wasn't as good of a year for Republicans as we were hoping for. I think obviously that's going to be totally different in 22. The first midterm after a new presidential always go heavily to the other party. Not to mention here in Oregon, we're actually getting an additional congressional district due to redistricting and all the population change. And that's going to actually push my district. It almost certainly has to, due to the way that we're wedged between the coast and the California border, has to push my district into a more Republican area. So I think our odds are going to be better mathematically. Our odds are going to be better just due to the timing and the national turn of events with Biden as president. And I mean, obviously, like I mentioned before, we're having a huge outpouring of support as well. So we're going to be even more organized. And I think that's going to really be what's going on across the country for Republican congressional candidates. I think we're going to have a lot of chances to pick up seats that are even more blue than mine. I mean, mine's very purple. It's actually, I think, a Republican leaning district by 1% technically. I think we have an opportunity for pickups all across the country, and I hope everybody is as excited about it as I am.
Well, I certainly hope so. Another big question here is we are seeing some truly compelling evidence of election fraud being uncovered in Arizona and now Georgia, certainly Michigan and Pennsylvania as well, including such things as thousands of ballots supposedly mailed out and then mailed back with no creases whatsoever from being folded. And that's not at all suspicious. Do you think that there was voter fraud here in Oregon?
I really don't, to be honest. I mean, we just haven't seen any evidence of that. We looked into our own race and we really found no evidence of it just from our own internal polling and things that the little bit of research that we have done. And to be honest, I mean, Democrats don't have to cheat in Oregon. This is still a blue state. It's a very blue state. We can be competitive on the congressional level. But unfortunately, with Portland, I mean, there's no way Trump is going to win Oregon anytime soon. There's no way any Republican is going to get elected in Oregon anytime soon unless we can get organized before the 22 cycle. And that's something that I'm really pushing for on the state level and the Oregon GOP, not only for my own race, but for a lot of races out there. I mean, this is going to be a great opportunity for Republicans. We really need to take advantage of it. So we want to make sure that we're firing on all cylinders leading up to 2022.
Well, while I agree with you that Oregon doesn't need to cheat on the statewide level because Democrats really outnumber Republicans, as you say, in your district, it's really Republican leading. So it wouldn't surprise me that there was something there. And Democrats just passed a law to prevent inactive voters from being removed off the rolls. I mean, that's not at all suspicious either. Nothing to see there, but plenty more to talk about with Alex Scarlatos, who's running again for Oregon's CD4. Stay with us. And welcome back. We're talking today to Alex Scarlatos. He's an actual American hero after rushing and disarming a terrorist on a Paris-bound train. He is stepping up again to run for Congress in Oregon's CD4 against Peter DeFazio, who's been there since the last century. So, Alec, let's talk a little bit about DeFazio, who is chairman of the House Transportation and Infrastructure Committee. He's been pushing for a huge infrastructure bill. And these massive bills, all too often, meaning every time, these massive bills, massive amounts of them go for things other than what's at the, in the name at the top of the bill, like COVID relief. The American people got back something like 10% of that, and 90% of it went elsewhere, including bailing out states and public unions and Democrat causes. So how much of DeFazio's infrastructure bill or the bipartisan infrastructure bill in the Senate, how much of it is actually going to go towards real infrastructure?
Well, with DeFazio's infrastructure bill, very little, because it's basically the Green New Deal repackaged as an infrastructure bill. The Senate bill, they don't even really have anything as a bill yet, so they're not even really voting on an actual physical bill. they're just basically voting on whether or not to proceed. So we'll have to wait and see what that comes out to be. But DeFazio has come out strongly against whatever the Senate's going to do. So that means that it's probably going to be bipartisan and probably at least a little bit more reasonable. So I'm hopeful to see what the Senate can put out, because we really need it. I mean, the cost of living has increased incredibly, mostly due to inflation from these massive stimulus and bailouts that the Obama administration and even the end of the Trump administration have passed. I mean, gas has risen over a dollar in just the last year in Oregon. I mean, people are really sick of inflation and the rising cost of living. And I think that's something we need to work to solve more so than coronavirus relief or even an infrastructure bill that's too top heavy and doesn't actually spend any money on infrastructure. But I'm very hopeful, and I hope we can see something come out of the Senate that does actually fix our infrastructure, which is desperately needed.
Well, I do know that DeFazio was on a phone call, essentially livid at what was going on there in the Senate, and he was hoping that the whole thing's is going to blow up on the Senate side. Aside from the infrastructure bill, which is, you know, anywhere from $1 trillion to several $1 trillion. The Democrats had reached agreement among themselves on a $3.5 trillion spending bill last week that would include expanding welfare, including Medicaid, and billions in climate change, among other pet projects, meaning a lot of that is going to go to Democrat support groups. I mean, Alec, this is approaching $10 trillion that the Democrats want to spend in 1 year. That's 2.5 times a normal budget year, and we still have one more year of this Congress. This just has to stop. And we're never going to defeat Democrats if you don't fix voter fraud, but you will also never defeat Democrats if we keep funding them with billions and billions and billions of taxpayer dollars. I mean, $10 trillion, this is crazy. This has to stop.
No, I mean, absolutely. I mean, $3.5 trillion, it's hard to even wrap your mind around that. And you think inflation is bad now and the rising cost of living is bad now. It's only going to get significantly worse if we're spending that amount of money. I mean, even if all of that money went to infrastructure, I would think that that's too much money to be spent.
No. The $3.5 trillion, they're calling that a human infrastructure bill.
Oh, of course. I mean, everything's infrastructure, don't you know? So, no, I mean, but even if that was true, that's too much money to be spent. I mean, we really need to rein in the national debt. I mean, it's inflation, rising cost of living, and just pure government waste aside. We are still spending way too much money in this country, and that's going to come to a head in my generation, most certainly. And that's something that I'm very concerned about, hopefully as an incoming member of Congress, not to mention just putting a check on the Democrat spending and really their out of control pet projects and making everyone spend money on things that really only help Democrats in their district. It's
well,
ridiculous.
Let's say that you do win next year. I mean, by then, we are easily going to be over $30 trillion in debt. How do you even begin to tackle that?
Well, you really honestly can't. What we really need to do first is slow government spending. We're not even in a position to even theoretically talk about reversing the national debt yet. And that's incredibly sad to say, and it's very scary, honestly. I would work at actually trying to get a balanced budget passed and make sure that we can actually afford everything that we're spending money on and not adding to the national debt first. And then we can worry about maybe in 10 or 15 years, worry about reversing the national debt. But unfortunately, that's only going to be possible if we elect a lot more fiscally minded conservatives, not just, you know, your run of the mill Republicans and rhinos and things like that, because they're also big spenders. I mean, as much as I support President Trump, he added to the national debt as well. We need to get some actual fiscal minded conservatives in office first. Republicans taking control isn't going to really do much unless they're the right kind of Republicans.
But absolutely. So DeFazio is, of course, AOC's right-hand man when it comes to climate change. And let me set this up a little bit, because I'd like to ask you if he would support Truth in Advertising. He's a big believer in windmills and other green energy. And according to Lina's Rare Earth website, a 3-megawatt drive turbine for a windmill uses close to 2.5 tons of rare earth permanent magnets per windmill, 2.5 tons. According to The Guardian, for every 1 ton of rare earth, mining and refining and processing that 1 ton of rare earth produces 2,000 tons of toxic waste. So for every one green windmill you see out there, it generates 5,000 tons of toxic waste. So shouldn't windmills have some sort of truth in advertising, some kind of label that says this windmill generated 5,000 tons of toxic waste? That's your green?
Well, look, I'm in favor of all sources of energy. I really don't care if they're green or not. We need to diversify our infrastructure, actually. I mean, I'm okay with wind turbines. I'm okay with solar. I'm okay with nuclear. I'm okay with coal. I really don't care. We need all kinds of energy, and they need to be diverse. I mean, the great thing about solar is that solar, for instance, peaks right when the grid peaks. So it's great to work in conjunction with coal, fired electrical plants. So it's hypocritical on their standpoint from calling everything green when it's really not. Solar panels use a lot of heavy metals and rare earth materials, and that's fine. But really, we should allow the free market to decide. We shouldn't subsidize these kinds of programs just because they're allegedly green or not.
Yeah. Yeah.
And honestly, that's solar panels have come down quite a bit as well in cost, and there are a lot of places that are adding them to the grid, and I think that's fantastic. But
I think if they want to be green, then they do need to look at expanding nuclear, because windmills actually generated more toxic waste than the entire nuclear industry year over year, and yet the nuclear industry puts out 20% of the state's energy supply versus 4% for wind. Okay, let's go and take a break. Coming up, we'll be talking about Oregon. And welcome back. We're in our final segment now with Alex Scarlatos. He's running for Congress in Oregon's 4th Congressional District. That's in the southwest of Oregon. And I want to focus a little bit more on Oregon in this last segment that we have with you. We've gone through some draconian shutdowns here in Oregon. They've crippled small family businesses. A lot of places like restaurants are closed for good. They're not going to reopen. So what would you be doing to help rebuild their livelihoods?
Frankly, just allowing them to open. I mean, a lot of people took advantage of the government loans to keep themselves running, and that's fantastic. But we really just need to allow people to open back up. We need to get rid of the increased unemployment benefits to keep people from working. Everybody right now is trying to reopen, and there's a huge influx of business from people excited that businesses are finally open, but they can't find employees to work for them. So that would be, I think, one of the first things that needs to be done to allow us to open back up and continue the prosperous life we were used to before all of this.
You know, speaking of workers, we had asked this to a previous guest a couple of weeks back when we were talking about the Oregon Restaurant and Lodging Association. A lot of the blame is put on the unemployment benefits, but I am wondering if the reason they're not able to find workers is just because we've lost a lot of workers. They've left the state. Oregon dropped something like 26 points. We were a net loss in terms of inbound migration. So do you think that we've just lost a lot of people?
I mean, that may be true a little bit, but I mean, there are still plenty of people that want to go to work. There's still plenty of people that want good jobs. Just a lot of them, especially on some of the lower paying jobs, they're paid more to stay home, or it's basically negligible. So they'd rather stay home and not work. Mm-hmm. I mean, let's get rid of the benefits and allow people and encourage people to go back to work first. And then we'll see if there's a gap in the employment market. But until we can't even really figure that out until we get people back to work.
Right. So timber, of course, is a big issue for your area, and not to mention all of Oregon. I found this rather funny. Oregon Governor Kate Brown had told CBS News' Face the Nation this last Sunday that the massive fires devastating the West Coast are a result of decades of mismanagement of our forests in this country, as well as the failure to tackle climate change. Decades of mismanagement. Alec, perhaps you know the answer to this question. Which party has been in charge of forests in Oregon for decades?
Well, the Democrat Party, and Peter DeFazio has been in Congress for about 5 years before the Northwest Forest Plan even went into effect. So, I mean, they definitely own this issue, and they would, I'm sure, love to blame climate change instead of forest mismanagement, because climate change is something they can't control, whereas forest management definitely hangs around their neck. I mean, it's an issue that really gets me mad. We should have been able to do something about this by now. We need to do something about this. The problem's only getting worse. We burned almost, I think, just over 1 million acres last year in Oregon alone, and this fire season is already looking pretty grim. We need to really get this figured out, and not only for the health of the forest and the amount of pollution that it puts out with these forest fires, but also the amount of money it would bring to county government, which is why the ONC laws were set in place in the first place. And the amount of economic growth that would occur if we allowed people to go work in the mills and harvest timber again. This is the poorest congressional district in the state and the timber capital of the world, and that is ridiculous to me.
Absolutely. Real quick, how can people get involved to support your race?
Well, they can visit alecfororegon.com. You can donate or shoot us an email if you'd like to volunteer. We appreciate the help, and I encourage everyone, no matter where they live, to do that for me or any other competitive congressional race across the country.
Okay. And just again, that's Alec for Oregon. That's F-O-R, alecfororegon.com. And we'll put that up on iSpyRadio.com as well. Alec, I want to thank you so much for your time, and best of luck as you launch this.
Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
When the left made politics and big government their full-time job, it fell on conservatives to make defending politics and smaller government their full-time job. The fight for 2022 and to retake America and make it free again, not dominated by petty dictators, that fight is right now. To help Alec get over the finish line, you may not have $1 million to give, but remember that small dollar donors help signal the big dollar donors where to put their money. Because as we say every week, the best information is no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.